Shalom Aleichem, Abiyafav Teach 613. We welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Chulin Kuf Tes, Chulin 109A, pagination 217. At the bottom of the page, three lines up, Masnisin, the new Mishnah, Hakechal, the udder, Koro, you tear it, Umotzi eschelbo, and take out its milk. A pressure action, and the milk will be removed. The udder is a classic challenge in the topic of mixtures of milk and meat. So the udder is meat and it contains milk. So how can you go ahead and use that as food in the kosher kitchen? So the Mishnah is telling us you rip it open so that the pockets of milk are exposed and you get rid of the milk. And then you'll be able to have the meat. Lo koro, if you did not tear it, ena over a lov, you're not going to be in violation. Rashi tells us, three lines from the bottom of the Rashis, you're not going to be in violation, lilkos, to get malchus for eating it or for cooking it, the lav cholov mikri, because it's not called milk, because it's chalav shchuta, it's the milk that was found within the animal after it was shecht, and that's not regular milk. Regular milk is that which was removed from the animal while it was still alive. So we have an interesting concept, not necessarily saying that there's any difference in a chemical sense between milk that's found inside the animal and milk that's outside, somehow that it's oxidized if it's outside, not necessarily saying that there's any chemical difference. It's simply that the law of milk, the halachic definition of milk, is emitted from a live animal. And if it wasn't, it's not called milk, according to the Oraisa biblical standards. We have a somewhat similar concept regarding damnida, the blood of a woman during her period, or uterine blood generally, if it came in an irregular cycle as well, is going to make the woman change status from tahor to tameh, from permitted to her husband to not permitted to her husband for that period of time until she goes to mikvah. Now, what happens if there was no hargasha, there was no sensation of the blood flowing, leaving the uterus? She just finds blood. She finds a stain on clothing. So the halacha is that even though in our estimates it may very well be from the uterus, but it's going to be of a rabbinic status, a drabonon, if there was no hargasha, there was no sensation. And therefore, there are all kinds of leniencies, such as if she finds it on colored clothing, we're lenient. If she finds it on karka olam, on something that does not become tamei, we're lenient. If she finds less than a certain shear, even if it's not likely to attribute it to a kina, the concept of a gris va'od, a small amount, even if it's not really attributable to something else, the rabbis in their time, when they made their legislation, that blood that's found becomes a status of tumah, they gave an amount that gives license that it doesn't become tamei less than that amount. And that's the amount of the derabbanan, and we're allowed to run with that because there's no gezeira derabbanan if those parameters aren't met. Are we saying that the blood that came with a hargasha, with a sensation, is chemically different than the blood that was found on the garment that came without a sensation? We're not saying that. Chemically, could be exactly the same. But because of the guidelines that we're being given as to what causes tumah, what's considered dam nida, so there are rules. And those rules give you the parameters of dam nida. Likewise, by kchal, not necessarily saying that there's any chemical difference in the milk, but it didn't meet the parameters creating milchic milk. And therefore, what's in the udder is not milchik, except midrabanan, there's a gzera against it to have it with meat. Let's turn the page. And we have a fascinating story towards the bottom of the Amud. Oh, there's one thing I wanted to add. In contrast, we just said that chemically, it could be the same thing. The milk in the udder, out of the udder, the dam from the uterus, as opposed to the dam that we're being lenient on, because there was no hargasha. There's a different application that will make that concept a little bit clearer when we contrast 5 grains that you could make hamotzi on, matzah, chametz, all of those topics. Wheat, barley, rye, oats, rye, spelt. Those 5 grains, as opposed to rice, orez v'dochen, rice and millet. In Talmudic literature, it's not that orez v'dochen, rice and millet, are just a gzeres hakosuv, but it's the exact same chemical properties. On the contrary, over there, it's what we would expect. It's a different chemical property. It's a different thing that's happening. And it's called, in Talmudic literature, if you do something that doesn't make chametz, but whatever it does do, you add fruit juice instead of water, it's called sirchon. It's a different word. It's not chametz. And over there, indeed, there's a difference in the chemical properties. But in the terms of the milk and the blood that I brought in as an analogy, not necessarily any difference in the chemical properties. It's a difference in the situation. So let's go to Amud Beis, counting up from the bottom. I'm guessing it's about 12 lines. In the middle of a line, Amra le'yalta l'Rav Nachman. Yalta, that's the name of a woman, the wife of Rav Nachman, said to her husband, Michti, let's think about it. Let's see. Kol da'osa lan rachmana, shara lan kavose. Everything that the Torah said was forbidden, the Torah gave us a situation that it's actually permitted. For example, osa lan dama, we're not allowed to eat blood. Shara lan kavda, we're allowed to have liver. Even though liver has a preponderance of blood, and indeed we know that it has a special method of heksher, through tzli, it has to be roasted, but even so, there's a presence of that taste, and it's permitted to have that taste, even though blood normally is forbidden. Dam nida, I'm sorry, nida, the blood of a woman from the menstrual cycle, Dam toar, there are cases of blood that are permitted. So Rashi says, dam besulim, the initial blood from the initial intimacy. And there's also dam tohar, of the blood that flows on a biblical level, we're talking, after a birth. A certain number of days after a birth until a different number of days from the birth. It depends if it's male or female, the child that was born. But there's a concept that even though there's blood, biblically it's permitted. Now, the Dam Besulim case is a little bit surprising because that is coming from an area of the birth canal. It's not coming from the uterus at all. It's like damaka. But that's how it's understood. That's how it's perceived. The dambesulim, newlyweds, do not have to separate because of that blood. They're allowed to finish the act of intimacy. So on some level, it tastes like, so to speak, it's an experience similar to nida, even though it's not nida. But Dam Tohar really makes the point, it's uterine blood. But because it's after a birth and meets certain parameters, biblically it's permitted. And Chelev Behema, the fats of a domesticated type animal, Chelev Chaya, we have the type from the non-domesticated animals, and the Chaya's Chelev is permitted. Chazir, pig meat, Mocha de Shivuta, Rashi says, a fish that has the same taste. Girusa Lishna de Kavra, again, another, and we have a certain taste in a different animal. Eshes Ish, Girusha Bechaye Baila, a married woman, but if she's divorced, even though the husband's still alive, it has that taste of a woman who belonged to somebody else. Eshes Ach, Yevama, the wife of the brother, but if he dies without children, and the living brother marries her, lahakim shame, to try to perpetuate the family name, that's permitted, even though really fundamentally we always understood her to be forbidden. Kusis, non-Jewish woman, yefastoar, there's a case described in Pashas Kisetze, in battle, where it's going to be permitted. Ba'inan lamecho bisra b'chalba, here's her point. She wants to eat milk and meat. She wants to get that taste. Amalu Rav Nachman, Sir Rav Nachman said, L'tabche, to the kitchen staff, Zaviku la kachli, roast for her the udder. And like this, she'll be able to get that taste. I have an example. I could show you. Basa b'cholav. Now, there's discussion here in the Gemara and also in Shulchan Aruch what exactly had to happen. And by the time La Halacha, we're done with this, we tear it, the milk is out, and it may just have some of that taste similar to the way the liver has the taste of blood just because of its presence. But it's not going to have real milk if this is done properly the way we understand it, La Halacha. But in any case, Rav Nachman said, perhaps he held that cooking is different than roasting, and roasting was okay. But in any case, this is the taste that he described, how to obtain it. And indeed, this contrast that Hashem controls halacha, and it's not just our intuition, is a theme of Parshas Parah, and the piyut associated with it. Now, one simple question that deserves to be asked here is, what was Yalta's point? She's just curious? She wants to taste basa b'chalav? I think there's something deeper over here. She was a great woman. That in observance, we're not just looking to observe because it feels good. Like we're trained that pork is dirty and it's bad, and therefore we won't go near it. There's something greater than that level of observance. Rashi describes it, Al tomar efshi, not to simply say it's disgusting, but Ovi shabashamayim gozar alai, Hashem commanded me. And perhaps therefore she wanted to understand what is permitted and what's forbidden, and have a more sophisticated understanding of observance rather than just going by the mood and the habit and the tendency. Yashar Koach, thank you for joining.